This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network with another installment in our series of conversations with Central Virginia bloggers. This installment is supported by DailyProgress.com. Catch up on the latest happenings in Central Virginia at DailyProgress.com. Charlottesville is going through a dramatic period of transformation. A general rise in housing prices is forcing the evolution of historic neighborhoods into something new. The Woolen Mills area, just to the east of the downtown mall, is no stranger to this phenomenon. But one man is cataloging the history of the place in words and photographs in order to preserve it for current and future generations.
Watch out. Hey, sir, get back in here. Your photographers are kind of light sensitive, you know.
That's Bill Emery, whose blog can be found at billemery.com. We've agreed to do this interview on a Monday night in early May, though we've not really discussed what we're going to talk about. Within seconds of entering his house, he tells me we're going to take a road trip through Woolen Mills in order to take a photo for his blog. For the most part, I just held the microphone and let Bill talk.
I mean, I don't know how much people in general know about the Woolen Mills neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's a interesting neighborhood. You know, it kind of got fired up back around 1800. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the neighborhood got fired up around 1811. It didn't actually become part of the city of Charlottesville until 1963. Most of it was annexed in 63. And, you know, so the Woolen Mills neighborhood, it developed as a community centered around this Woolen Mill. Surprise, surprise. Actually, we'll zip on down there real quick. I don't know if you've ever been down there. The owner who was kind of the most formative for the mill was this guy, Henry Marchant, Henry Clay Marchant, who his dad had owned it before him, but he kind of took charge in the mid-1860s. He got shot up down in Petersburg and came up here and took over the mill. And he's a really interesting man. I mean, you know, a lot of ways, he was way ahead of his time. Like, he gave his workers medical insurance. You know, before the 1900s, he had this belief that if you took care of your people, they would return your sort of kind efforts a hundredfold. And so it's really pretty tight, amazing community. And he always lived, the presence of the mill always lived right up here in this house on top of the hill. It's kind of cool, you know. It wasn't like they were, you know, running a big smokestack industry and living hundreds of miles away. You know, he was proud of what he did and, you know, lived right next to his workers. And in fact, the lady who built my house, her mother died, and Mr. Marchant took her in for a number of years, and she lived there in the house along with her brother until she was old enough to go out on her own. I mean, he was like a good guy. You know, he would buy like food and resell it to his workers cheap and stuff. But so this is an interesting area, you know. I mean, like, we're 7/10 of a mile away from Monticello. You know, Jefferson used to like ride his horse down the hill and cut through the neighborhood, go up what was then called the Rivanna Turnpike, and later called Woolen Mills Road, and now we know it as Market Street. He died in 1910. The Woolen Mill kept on running for a long time, but finally went out of business in like 1962. So when the city annexed it, they sort of thought of it as this failed industrial neighborhood, so they weren't real devoted to it. They slapped a little bit of, at least I think it was the city, I need to find out, slapped a little manufacturing zoning on it. And so that's what has me out here today. The manufacturing zoning, it's funny. It's like if you, and of course, we're not in the Woolen Mills right now. This is like the Woolen Mills has this entry here that's it's kind of like going through the Looking Glass and Alice in Wonderland or down the rabbit hole or whatever it was. Here we are in East Belmont or East Carlton, and then you go through the Looking Glass here and you're in the Woolen Mills. So the one piece of kind of manufacturing property in the Woolen Mills is over yonder. And it's actually, you know, been built on, and it's not so bad. They're good neighbors. They're quiet. But what's happening now, you know, there's like a real estate firestorm that's occurring in Charlottesville and Albemarle. And realtors are like looking for the land. The Willow Mills has a density per acre of about 2 people, or actually 1.96. And there's some developers who want to buy this lot and put, I think currently there are seven townhouses. So that's on the east side of Franklin and just north of the railroad bridge. Or actually, I guess this was called Second Road back in the old days. And well, back in the lady who lives up there in that house where Franklin intersects with Market, I've got a picture of somebody standing in her front yard back in 1920, taken from basically where the road is. I mean, it was a path back then. You know, didn't really get used, but nowadays, you know, we might have, 20 concrete trucks come through here in 4 hours. It's having a corrosive effect on the neighborhood. So, you know, we're a little bit concerned about this lot here, just because the density they're proposing for the lot is 10 times the Willow Mills average. So the reason what I'm up to now, I want to go out and get some pictures of houses that I think are more or less the type that they're proposing to put in the Willow Mills. We're now, what is this? Is this Franklin, I guess you'd call this? Headed towards the... It used to be a private house down there, but now it's something called the Linden Lofts. The city still has something called PUD, PUD, Planned Unit Development. And PUDs were this really popular... They first came into being for parcels over 3 acres as a way to develop green fields and keep all the houses sort of clustered and then, you know, have a lot of open space. But they've evolved into this sort of eight-legged monster that the city can't dictate what's going to be on them once they rezone to PUD. And like this one here, I think was supposed to have a bunch of affordable housing content, and as it is, $250,000 starting price. I'm not sure that's so affordable. But so what I'm looking for is I'm looking for some townhouses to photograph. The Willow Mills, you know, has always been about the single-family detached residence. There's a thing that happens to people when they have their own house, which is they love the yard, and you know they're out there. You know, really, no matter how humble the house, you know, you have this developed a sense of stewardship, I guess, for lack of a better word. You just really care about your environment. Whereas, you know, on the townhouse, I don't know, I guess maybe you develop that same sense. But so I'm going to jump out here and see what I can snap a picture or two. So what I wanted, what I sort of pre-visualized, I think these are actually a little bit narrower than the units they're talking about for the Willow Mills, but somewhat similar, 2 stories, varying details per unit. Yeah, they've got some nice features on them. I guess particularly notable are the metal flowers. You would never have to do water those or do anything, you know? I'm sort of a tripod guy. You know, years ago I told myself that I would try to use a tripod when I was taking pictures. It always makes for a better picture, but no tripod today. Let's see, varying things around here a little bit. You know, it's an interesting thing about photography. Like, okay, so there's this PUD that, well, it's a long story, but the Willow Mills, people have lived, like I was saying, down there for a couple hundred years. And after the war was over between the South and the North, this region was, you know, pretty messed up. There was, like, compared to, you know, but I think I've read there was like a 20th as much circulation here. So like for every dollar circulating here, there were $20 circulating in Fall River. So I mean, the economy was sort of at a standstill, and it was really important to have money coming in. And so these people at the woolen mills, they were basically saved Charlottesville's bacon. Many of the women in the neighborhood worked in the mill. Some of them worked in houses as maids in the fancier neighborhoods of Charlottesville. But they were, you know, they were hardworking people, and they basically brought money into Charlottesville, which made it possible for the region to recover. And most of these folks that moved to the woolen mill had, like, just been yeoman farmers that lived out in the country before. And so they brought a lot of their sort of country, like their country practices. Like, you know, they were gardeners, and they were real strong family people. But you just never hear about them. Let's see here. What else I need to do? I think I'm almost covered. I'm just count up units here. I need 7 units. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But anyway, you know, it's just a group of people that have never been recognized. I mean, it's occasionally over the years, the Daily Progress would have a you know, article about the mill. But what I'd really like to see is just the working people of Charlottesville recognized. I mean, we recognize the university. We recognize, you know, a lot of the older houses where, you know, doctors and such would live. But, you know, we can't really recognize the working people of Vinegar Hill because their neighborhood's gone. And if we're not careful, you know, we won't be able to recognize the working people of the woolen mills because their neighborhood will have sort of succumbed to, you know, different type of bulldozer, the bulldozer of, you know, zoning and gentrification. I mean, don't get me wrong on the gentrification thing. It's not like fixing up your house is bad. We've got a fabulous, diverse mix of people in the woolen mills. In 1974, the city had something called a landmark study. They went around town and they studied historic buildings. And in the woolen mills, in that original study, they came up with one historic building, which was the church, which was built in 1886. Sort of this religious revival was sweeping the country. But the woolen mills, it's fascinating. I mean, this whole mill village thing, mill villages are what, you know, propelled the economy of the state of Virginia after the Civil War. But out of 300 mill villages that existed in the state, there's not a single one that's a historic district. And so the people down in Richmond, the Department of Historic Resources, they're very excited about the Charlottesville Woolen Mills neighborhood. And we're just trying to, you know, relay that excitement to our city planners and our city politicians. Get some of the city to sort of look at our neighborhood before it does get inalterably changed. I mean, like, for instance, where they're trying to put this PUD up here, that house, it's the backyard of Warren Graves' house, who was a supervisor. He started working the mill in 1880, but when he retired, and, you know, 51 years later, in 1931, he was a supervisor of the carting department. And his house was actually on lot number one of the 1885 subdivision in the neighborhood. So, you know, it's as historic as a woolen mill gets, but, you know, I guess he didn't write the Declaration of Independence or something like that. So, you know, he's just kind of a working guy. This place, it's just very dear to my heart. I've been photographing it since I moved here in 1987. And never with any real sense of pressure or doom or anything like that, but here recently, there's been a real sense of pressure and doom, and partially that's from I had this great sort of cancer experience this last year, and it looks like I'm entirely dodging that bullet, but it's kind of like the second chance. It's like I'm now the designated person for the for the woolen mills and for all these people who used to live here and who have just never been heard from. You know, their story is really fascinating. I mean, there's and the thing that scares me is that if we can preserve the three-dimensional or the four-dimensional sort of artifact of the woolen mills, I mean, if it's still there and it's still recognizable as a place where people live, I think that over the years people will do the scholarship and will actually put in the work involved to make available a really fascinating historical narrative of, well, how did people, working people live in, you know, 1880 and, or, you know, 1910 or 1950. All the records are there. But, you know, basically we need the three-dimensional thing to motivate the scholarship. And the three-dimensional thing is very much threatened now. And I remember when this graveyard, we're in, and this, oh, this is the grave of the Henry Marchant. But this whole graveyard is zoned R2, which would mean that if you were a clever developer, you could come in here and, you know, as long as there weren't any dead people on the way, and as you can see, there are vast areas of this graveyard that don't have any graves in them. As long as you weren't moving any dead people, you could put multi-family dwellings, you know, all over this thing. You know, and it's just, what I would love is, you know, if there were people, like, on foot, walking through this neighborhood, you know, walking by, you know, a house like mine and seeing, or my next-door neighbor's, you know, seeing a sign like, well, you know, here live, you know, Marcellus Harlow and his wife Betty and their children and the boarders. Everybody had boarders that lived in their houses, and, you know, Marcellus was a mechanic and, you know, Betty was a specker in the mill or whatever her job was. You know, they could walk past the house and they could come down here and see their graves. They could sit here and, you know, have a picnic and, you know, look at Monticello up there on the left. Or, but, you know, when I first started walking out here, all this, and, you know, it's just beyond me why everybody wants to put development right around an impaired river. It just, you know, totally is a bad idea. But all these houses, none of that was up there. Oh, this is all new. We are actually on a list to be looked at as a historic area, but we're last on the list, and the survey for the Woolen Mills is as yet unfunded. So, you know, kind of. But here recently, the blog's been kind of, it's been a little bit of a communication tool to try to inform people that haven't ever been down the Woolen Mills or don't know much about it, you know, inform them of the history. Now, and of course, you know, Kendra Hamilton says that all the neighborhoods are historic, and yeah, she's right about that. I mean, history doesn't stop at a certain time or whatever, but in terms like historic structures, I mean, for instance, on this street, the only historic structure is this building here, the Young Building, which I think was maybe an office building for a tannin extracting plant or something like that. And I think it was built in 1916. My house, which of course has no historical standing whatsoever as far as the city was concerned, was built in 1890. The Woolen Mill starts right there at the railroad tracks, but the zoning through here is what's so wild. The Woolen Mills neighborhood actually includes, you know, neighborhood associations were formed, I guess, back in the early 80s, and ours includes Mr. Marchant's house here in the county. And that beautiful house, which is in, like, Ed Lay, who's this incredible architectural historian, it's in his book on, you know, like, houses in Jefferson's Virginia. I can't remember the title. This is actually zoned L1, light industrial. So, you know, its fate, if the lady who owns it ever was feeling a little timorous, might be to, you know, knock it down with a bulldozer and put up razor wire and maybe be a, you know, warehouse for light bulbs or something like that. And the zoning down here, it's a dangerous thing being on an interjurisdictional border. It's like you don't really belong to the city. You don't really belong to the county, and it's like a train track. This is being used as an argument for, there's residential zoning all the way along the train track. The train track is the Willamilla southern border. But the train track is being used as an argument, has been used historically and is being used by the current sort of developers as an argument for, well, there's a train track. We need to buffer from the train track. We need to, you know, install a heavier use. These houses, like 1830 house there, 1850 house there. Now, that old power plant, which the mill used when they went from water power to electricity, that is zoned residential. This duplex, we're in the county now, this duplex here on the left is zoned residential. This duplex here on the left is zoned residential. This duplex here on the left is zoned light industrial. Now, go figure. It seems like it would be a textbook example of what they call spot zoning, but you know, I don't really know how, but, you know, some sort of historical accent, I guess, or somebody's pen jerked when they were drawing the line. But so, you know, the Willamilla, like I say, it's just, I mean, you could knock that down and build an auto parts place there. Or, I don't know, fabricate hubcaps or something. I mean, there isn't a question that, you know, the industrial land is in short supply in Albemarle. So, yeah, what the hell, you know, let's knock down some 1850s buildings. We need some more Butler buildings up, you know, some more nice metal things. But, you know, there was this amazing network of family and... I mean, I guess this is just, you know, the old story back before everybody in America moved on average once every 4 years. These people were here and working in this rather wonderful setting for, well, it depends when you want to date it from, but I mean, just think of, you know, it's sort of like 99 years of solitude or something. Over a century they were here. And the everybody knew each other. They were like a big family. I mean, how many times have I heard that from? I'm doing oral histories on some of the older people who live in the neighborhood, and you always hear that they could go anywhere in the neighborhood and eat dinner. They didn't have to go back to their house. So. I mean, that's another supervisor house. That's actually an interesting one. That's the Timberlake house. The guy was like a wet finisher at the mill. Wet finishing was actually a very technically demanding occupation. And, you know, over the years, this is... jump in here. And then so for a while, this house almost got picked up as a residence. And you know, the Virginia Department of Historic Resources loves this house. And they talked about how it was one of the large houses on Market Street. And you know, some houses around here, you know, been lost over the years to fire, to road building, or whatever. And so they love this house. But anyway, it got snapped up because, you know, once again, because it was along the railroad tracks, even though people don't use railroad tracks anymore, you know, everything's done by truck now, the city and its, I think the city, anyway, in its wisdom, there was all this manufacturing zoning back here. And so you have this sort of, and actually there, you know, it's very quiet. It's a nice little mini storage facility back here. And then up here on the front half of the property is actually all zoned R1. Again, there's Monticello over there. But so this guy years ago got on. Blake Hurt, who he's now like a computer artist, I think, but years ago he was a sort of a contractor type land developer guy. And he got what they call a special use permit for adult daycare center, which was really a great idea. You know, we definitely need an adult daycare center. And yeah, I was like the jerk in the room going, no, no, you know, don't change it. Because, well, now this is actually, it's under discussion in the, you know, it's the city, this is zoned R1, and by right it could have this back part of the lot. I think it had one house on it, but it's under discussion with the city for a much more dense development. And of course, we're really hoping that it will maintain its residential character as opposed to, you know, being, oh gosh, I don't know, 20, 30 apartments, something like that. There we go, big old panel truck rolling down the street. There are 1,000 stories here. There are definitely 1,000 stories, and they're pretty much untold, and they will get told if, you know, if the buildings stay.
As we conclude our tour through Willen Mills, Bill Emery tells me many details about each house along the way. To collect the stories of the place, he searched through city deeds, read up on the history, and has conducted his own interviews.
And these buildings are really the source of information. You know, it's funny, like this street, Fairway Street, it's like, what's that about, you know? There used to be the Albemarle Golf Links here, and my former neighbor and former neighborhood president back in the 1980s, Roy Baltimore, when he was a child, young man, he used to caddy for people playing on the Albemarle Golf Links. Now, they weren't Willen Mills residents. They were, you know, business people. I can't remember. I've got him on tape.
There was a common name applied to this area. They called it the Place.
The Place.
The Place, the P-L-A-C-E. Uh-huh. I don't know how that came into being, but if you listen to some of the older people, Louis's mother, some of my aunts, whenever they referred to this area, they'd always call it the place.
Uh-huh.
This family has moved on the place. This family has moved away from the place.
Right.
That was the terminology they used. And it extended up to the last house I show on that little rough sketch I've got.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How'd you and Louise meet?
Well, we were right across the street from each other, finally. But actually, when you were living here on this area, which is called the place. You knew everybody.
Right.
You visited people. We would go to different people's homes for dinner after church, you know.
Uh-huh.
You knew everybody.
Right.
It was, as I look back on it now, it was a very unique
relationship. Wonderful. Yeah, wonderful situation. Now, Roy, how about, you said when you were a boy, when you went beyond the railroad tracks, was there anything down there, or was it just, what was down there?
Nothing. There were a few houses down there, but it was called Hogwalla.
Right.
Get the rescue squad, yeah.
Now, how about going into town? Was the road all paved and everything? Or was
this road
gravel?
Wasn't paved. The pavement started just this shy of Meade Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Just a dirt road.
What did people down here think about it when the city went to annex Willen Mills? When you were little, was this Market Street or was it Willen Mills Road?
Willen Mills Road.
Right.
In fact, for a long, long time, as I was writing to Louise from Newport News, I always drifted to Willen Mills Road, never Market Street.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the community group, when I first moved back here, had a project to get this street renamed Willen Mills Road rather than East Market Street.
Uh-huh.
But it never was carried through to a success.
Maybe we need to do that.
I wish it had been, because I would prefer it could be called Willen Mills Road.
Well, I'll introduce that next neighborhood meeting.
Well, yeah.
So when did they change the name? Do you have any idea?
Well, it wasn't changed officially, in that Willen Mills Road was never an official designation other than the acceptance by the post office as an address,
uh-huh.
if that constituted acceptance.
Right.
I think it just developed from the fact that the area built up, the roads were paved, the city water was brought down here, the sewer line was extended down here. And when that was done, it became an extension of East Market Street, so it was called East Market Street, see?
You've been listening to the history of the Willen Mills neighborhood, as told by photographer Bill Emery. To find out more, do check out his website at billemery.com and follow his documenting of the Willen Mills neighborhood on his blog. This has been a conversation with a Seaville blogger on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. We receive support from the Charlottesville Daily Progress, who have their own blog at dailyprogress.com. Check it out for all the latest on what's happening in Central Virginia. You can check out our website at seavillepodcast.com. Charlottesville Podcasting Network is a public service of Wordcast Productions. I'm Sean Tubbs. Thanks for listening.